You're listening to Anything and Everything I Learned Last Week with me, your host, Patrick McCormack. Today on episode 2, the benefits of grunt work, leadership tips, overcoming negative thoughts, and more. As tough an idea as it often is to stomach, the best way to thrive in a world that requires grunt work is to stop seeing it as grunt work. That quote from Ryan Holiday is, funny as it sounds, something that gives me peace. Why? Well, it justifies the daily toils of our lives because the world demands them. Grunt work is the price of admission for all life, when you think about it. It's fun to fantasize about a life that requires no work whatsoever, absent of errands to run, taxes to pay, or messes to clean up, and instead live a life full of hammocks and puppies and Netflix binges. But the reality is that after childhood, our lives get pretty complicated, and complicated lives require maintenance. A life worth living requires work of many types. In the home, there's laundry. You gotta mow your lawn. You gotta put the dishes away. There are tasks that keep our nest in order. Our relationships need constant attention. We have to date our spouse, take an interest in our children's activities. Gotta call your mom. Activities such as these keep the paths of those people in our lives in the closest possible orbit around planet me. Our careers, our bodies, and our minds all need regular tweaking and tightening to keep them healthy. Every animal's survival requires maintenance. Squirrels forage and dig for food constantly. Birds build and rebuild their nests. Ants dig complex tunnels that need upkeep and expansion. Even cats, the kings of the cush life, must spend hours bathing themselves. My point is, the agony of the minutiae in our daily lives, like having to get an oil change or pick up the dry cleaning, it's not special. It's way more detailed and nuanced than what's required of other animals, sure, but then so is the rest of our society. Grunt work is a natural part of life, like breathing and sleeping. The more complicated a life is, the more maintenance it requires. And that's a good thing. It presents a reason to get out, reasons to learn new skills, to find activities to keep our minds and hands occupied. Think of the alternative. All consumption, all the time. You know, at first it seems nice, but eventually, maybe after about a week, you'll be mush, craving something to do. The alternative to grunt work is comfortable atrophy, stillness, boredom, death. A total bummer. Allow people to chart their own path toward goals. Give them objectives rather than to-do lists. I love this leadership tip from a recent Adobe blog post by designer Lynn Vizard. She hits the nail on the head when it comes to motivating people to do their best. If we're told how to do something, we can feel micromanaged. I know that in my case, if I feel too managed, I might just throw my hands up and say, you know what? You do it. And it's not productive. Instead, a leader must stop at the what rather than the how. Tell people what you want them to do and let them surprise you with their how. Applying the proper amount of accountability and autonomy will produce results. And this is true in and out of the workplace. If my spouse tries to manage how I completed a task, I'd likely fly into a mini rage, tapping into my inner 2-year-old. And if I, a copywriter, was too hawkish on a project at work, for example, overly art directing my design partner's work, she'd have every right to tell me to fuck off and mind my own deadlines. Leadership of any type, whether we're leading from a mile ahead or as from a step alongside, requires a transition of accountability and empowerment. I need your help getting this done, and I trust you to do a good job. That's all it takes. Negativity bias is a real son of a bitch. I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is you're alive. The bad news is that in order to stay that way, Your brain's evolved to see everything that sucks around you pretty much all the time. It's called negativity bias, and our brains boot up from birth, running it in the background at all times. It's an ancient survival technique, and I like how Dr. Rick Hansen puts it. Negative stimuli produces more neural activity than do equally intense, ergo loud or bright, positive ones. They're also perceived more easily and quickly. For example, people in studies can identify angry faces faster than happy ones. Even if they're shown these images so quickly, in just a tenth of a second or so, that they cannot have any conscious recognition of them, the ancient fight or flight limbic system of the brain will still get activated by the angry faces. It's a reaction that keeps that kept our ancestors alive. You're likely to live longer if you're keeping an eye out for what could eat you. Today, we're a little less prone to being someone else's lunch, but that doesn't stop our minds from running bias.badshit.xml at all times. Stimuli that was once sharp teeth emerging from the bushes or the shadow of a shark swimming above our sea-dwelling ancestors have been replaced by paper tigers. That gut-wrenching feeling you might get when you think of asking a cute guy out or when you need to give a presentation in a meeting, that's the feeling of vulnerability. And when we're vulnerable, the ancient parts of our brains fire up and cause us to feel like we're about to get eaten alive. Dr. Hansen continues, quote, "The alarm bells of your brain, the amygdala, you've got two of these little almond-shaped regions, one on either side of your head. They use about two-thirds of its neurons to look for bad news. It's primed to go negative. Once it sounds the alarm, negative events and experiences get quickly stored in memory, in contrast to positive events and experiences, which usually need to be held in awareness for a dozen or more seconds to transfer from short-term memory buffers to long-term storage." There's an exercise we can perform to combat negative bias, and it's something that Dr. Hansen alluded to in that quote of holding negative thoughts in your head. Think positively of something good, an experience you enjoy. Like he suggests, hold these positive thoughts in your mind for about 10 seconds to imprint them. You have to put in some deliberate work, true, but the payoff is worth it. Your anxiety will go down, your proneness to vulnerability will decline, and the problems you confront will become more manageable. Avoid compulsively making things worse. Debbie Millman is a well-known writer, designer, and educator. She recently appeared as a guest on the Tim Ferriss Show and contributed a fascinating interview. She ended the conversation with the quote I just read that she discovered from, of all things, a fortune cookie. She kept the fortune, taping it to her laptop, so she keeps it in her mind regularly. It teaches a simple lesson, yet a lesson that is easily ignored. Don't react. Respond. Wait, breathe, take a step back, and don't immediately react to what you feel is an attack. Slow down your decisions. Wait an hour or hold out overnight to respond to some supposed hurt. I'm definitely guilty of compulsively making things worse or harder than they need to be sometimes. My emotions get the best of me, and I stop thinking and start reacting. And all it does is make things worse. It escalates rather than solves. It's easier than being calm and rational to just react. But all throwing a fit or punching back does is make things worse. I'm just doubling down on suckiness. Instead, it's better to hold back, consider options, and choose the best way forward in pursuit of peace, and do whatever it takes to get there. That's it for this week's episode. Thanks for tuning in. Drop us a subscribe, and you can always catch the text version of these podcasts on my blog at medium.com at PMAC Letters. See you next week.